Mountain Hill Radio contains graphic language and scenes some listeners may find troubling. Listener discretion is advised. Everything you are about to hear is absolutely fictional. The town of Mountain Hill is just that, a town. The people of Mountain Hill are just people, and never has there been a true case of a monster stealing a human's skin. The forests do not contain fairy creatures from another world, the streets are not terrorized by monsters who only come out at night, and the water is perfectly safe to swim in. We're safe here. We promise. This is Mountain Hill Radio. Hello and a wonderful morning to you, dear listeners. Today is a nice, cool 62 degrees outside, and it seems like that storm is getting a little nearer. We are expecting heavy rain and a bit of thunder and lightning. Make sure you have all the food and other supplies you may need in the coming weeks. This ought to be a long one. Today's episode is brought to you by Melody's Curiosities and Antiques. Stop on in and check out her wares. She has new inventory once a month. No one knows where she gets her stuff, and she'll never tell. The sound of a slamming door wakes Dorothy in the middle of the night. It's loud, so it must be her cousin Miranda, also known as Andy, but only to Dorothy. Andy stomps through the hall of their small two-bedroom trailer, her angry grumbling not quite loud enough for Dorothy to make out the words, but it's not hard to guess what Andy's pissed about. She knows she won't be getting any sleep anytime soon as she hears cabinets banging open and closed as Andy makes herself tea. She knows her cousin well enough to recognize that Andy is probably being loud, so Dorothy will come out and investigate. So Dorothy gets up and wraps a blanket around her shoulders. She's wearing a tank top and sleep shorts, and the air is chilly in the trailer. Andy likes to keep things at a sub-zero state, and Dorothy has given up all hope in arguing with her about the thermostat. Dorothy exits her small bedroom, stepping into the dimly lit hallway. The place reeks of Andy's cat, Susie, and Dorothy tries not to grimace. For the most part, she has managed to keep the smell out of her room, but it's like hitting a brick wall every time she comes out here. Still, it's better than where she used to live, who she used to live with. Dorothy shakes off those thoughts as she walks to the front of the trailer. Andy is standing with her hip against the counter, glaring down at their tiny stovetop as if her glare could make it heat her water any faster. "Watched water never boils," Dorothy says, and Andy turns her sharp gaze on her. "What'd Danny do this time?" Andy sighs, some of her anger leaving her with the action. Dorothy never used to think of herself as a calming presence. In fact, up until a few nights ago, she had had the nickname Chaos Incarnate. Not so much a nickname as a calling card, she supposes, but she didn't come up with the damn thing. "I went to surprise him at work since I got off a little early," Andy says. She then launches into a rather detailed explanation of the scene she stumbled in on in the back of the small diner Danny works in, and Dorothy's frown deepens as Andy's voice grows thick with emotion. This isn't the first time Danny has snuck into the back office of the diner with one of the new waitresses, and it also isn't the first time Dorothy wishes she still had her crew at her back. Dorothy doesn't have siblings, but growing up alongside Andy made them closer than most brothers and sisters Dorothy knew. She's been protective of her younger cousin since they were 10, and Adam Ritchie shoved Andy down into a mud puddle, ruining Andy's favorite pink dress. At first, Dorothy hadn't stepped in, thinking Andy was just as tough as she was. But then the huge, heartbreaking tears came, and Dorothy realized not everyone in this world has the same tough skin she'd been forced to don, though not everyone had the same upbringing she did. When the first tear fell, Dorothy knew right then and there she would destroy anyone who made her cousin cry. It was the first time she ever punched someone, giving Adam the black eye he deserved. And it hadn't been the last time she'd hit someone either. Now, Andy is an adult, and though she occasionally appreciates Dorothy stepping in on her behalf, she's expressed a time or two that she'll never be able to figure her life out if Dorothy is always there taking care of her. Dorothy wants to punch Andy's piece of shit boyfriend, but she knows Andy would never forgive her for stepping in. So she waits, hoping Andy asks for help. She knows Andy never will, but the hope is still there nonetheless. "He just acts so..." Andy trails off, shaking her head. "He says he loves me, says he would do anything for me, but then I try to do something sweet and thoughtful for him, and catch him yet again with someone new. And I can't get mad at her for it, because it's not her fault he's a liar and a cheat. That poor girl thought I was gonna hit her or something." Andy closes her eyes a moment, and Dorothy senses tears coming on. It takes everything she has not to wrap her arms around her cousin to try and soothe the pain she doesn't deserve. But Andy doesn't want comfort in that way. So Dorothy holds her ground and her breath, waiting for the storm of emotions to ease. Finally, Andy opens her brown eyes and meets Dorothy's blue ones. "Can we just get away for a while?" Dorothy tries to mask her surprise at Andy's request. It's totally unlike her to want to leave their small town, to be far away from Danny in case he comes running to apologize. But that hope from earlier is still there, a hope that maybe Andy is finally ready to leave that asshole behind, to find someone who will actually love her and cherish her and not cheat on her on a nearly monthly basis. "What do you have in mind?" Dorothy asks. Andy shrugs. "I sort of hoped you would have an idea. All I want is to just get away from here, out of this town." Dorothy says she'll come up with something, and they move on to other topics as Andy makes her tea, drinks it, and her eyes steadily grow heavier and heavier as she finally relaxes enough to get some sleep. Dorothy helps her to her room and into her bed, pressing a kiss to her forehead before slipping silently away, shutting the door on Andy's soft snores. It takes Dorothy a few days to come up with an idea, but this is actually something that has been kicking around for a while in her own head, and she really hopes Andy agrees to it. She wants to do something for Andy, of course, but this is also a little for herself. "You want to go hiking?" Andy asks, her arms folded across the table in front of her as she leans forward. They are out to eat at a diner that Danny doesn't work at, waiting for their massive breakfast. They do this at least once or twice a week, eating breakfast after Dorothy gets home from whatever security gig she'd been hired for. Last night I had been to attend a wedding of an extremely high-profile client and act as a guest. She'd had to wear a long-sleeved blouse that covered the tattoos she has on both arms, but the money had been worth it. "Yeah," Dorothy answers, shrugging. She takes a sip of her coffee, grimacing at the too sweet taste. She hadn't been paying much attention when she poured the creamer in and accidentally added one too many. "Is that okay?" Andy shrugs. "I just never figured you were the outdoorsy type." Dorothy raises her brows at that, glancing out the large front window of the diner at her motorcycle. It was a 2009 Harley-Davidson Nightster, and it was the first thing Dorothy had bought for herself after everything had gone to shit in her old life. But that was then, and in this new life, the one she shares with Andy, she is an entirely new person. And that person loves the outdoors, loves the feeling of fresh air and wide open spaces, and on days when she doesn't have a security gig she has to worry about, Dorothy is often out on the road, traveling up and down this entire state, which is exactly where she came up with her idea. "I am an outdoorsy person," Dorothy says, and Andy snorts. "Okay, just because I don't like bugs, or snakes, or lizards, or birds, or..." "Okay," Dorothy laughs, tossing her napkin across the table at her cousin. Andy snatches it out of the air, cackling hysterically. "Yes, just because I'm scared of the things that live outside doesn't mean I don't enjoy being outside. As long as they stay in their lane, we won't have any problems." "Where exactly do you want to go?" Andy asks, once she's calmed down from her laughing fit. "There isn't much hiking to do around here." Dorothy grins. Andy's right. They live in the lower class area of their town, but the sights to see from here are mostly skyscrapers and poorly cared for sidewalks and streets. This place likes to devour you, mind, body, and soul, and Dorothy has been feeling the effects for a while now. "On my last trek across the state, I found this place," she says, pulling out her cell phone and loading up the photo she took about a month ago. "It's pretty secluded and out of the way, but there were a lot of hiking trails around the area. And there's an inn we can stay at, too. Oh, and a small bookstore." Andy raises her brows as she looks at the sign. "I've never heard of it." "Exactly. It'll be the perfect place to get away." "From Danny," she doesn't say. "We can go stay for a week or two, then come back nice and refreshed." "How far is it?" Andy asks, taking a sip of her orange juice. With extra pulp because she is a monster, at least according to Dorothy, who tries not to frown at her cousin because she knows Andy only drinks this stuff because it disgusts her. "It's about 2 hours from here," Dorothy says. "We'll have to take your car, but..." "I'm in," Andy says, and Dorothy feels relieved. She knows Andy doesn't often like to travel outside of her comfort zone, and 2 hours away is a stretch, even for her. We're gonna have fun, Dorothy says, but first we need to get you some boots. Andy frowns and Dorothy laughs. She feels genuine hope for the first time in a while. Andy has decided to break the cycle, where Danny cheats on her, she's angry and refuses to see him, he shows up and begs on his knees for her forgiveness, and ultimately, she always forgives him. Maybe she's finally as tired of going through this over and over again as Dorothy is of watching her suffer. She hates seeing anyone she loves hurting, and Andy has done more hurting than anyone else Dorothy knows. Their food finally arrives, and as they dig in, Andy lifts her glass of orange juice. "To new adventures," she says. Dorothy lifts her mug of coffee and says, "To small towns no one has ever heard of." They drink, then set to devouring their meals. It's about 2 weeks later, when Dorothy finally has a week off, that they make their preparations and begin the 2-hour drive to the middle of nowhere. They listen to music, mostly Dorothy's folk music since Andy's taste tends to skew towards classical. There's nothing wrong with that, but it tends to get to be a little much on a road trip, even just a short one. Andy nearly passes the freeway exit that leads to where they're going, but manages to see it just in time to swerve across 3 lanes which are fortunately devoid of traffic at this time. Dorothy is used to risky maneuvers, but still, her heart is in her throat as she glares at her cousin. "Sorry," Andy says, a little sheepish, and Dorothy rolls her eyes. "To be totally fair, you didn't tell me the exit number." Dorothy grumbles, but lets it go. It was a dumb move, but they're safe. She's unfortunately used to Andy's erratic driving by now, but that doesn't mean it doesn't make her nervous as hell to be a passenger in her car. They pull onto the long, winding road that leads to the small town Dorothy found a while back. They make their way up, until they finally pass the sign Dorothy's been waiting for. "Welcome to Mountain Hill," Andy says, glaring at the print at the bottom of the sign. "A safe place in an unsafe world, huh? That's nice and ominous." Dorothy laughs and shakes her head. "It really is." They round the corner and find themselves on the main road that stretches across town. Dorothy stopped here for a little while one day, looking at the businesses lining the street and making mental notes as to where she would want to visit if she ever had the time. She wants to make an effort to stop at all of these places, especially the antique store they passed a moment ago. Dorothy enjoys collecting weird shit. Her bedroom and their trailer is full of random items she's found over the years. Most of them were, borrowed on a permanent basis, but what no one else knows won't hurt them. "Let's head over to the inn," Dorothy says, pointing to the tallest building on this stretch of road, only 4 stories. "We can get our stuff put away and then head out if you want." Andy nods and pulls in front of the inn. They get out and head inside, checking into the room they'd booked the same day they'd made their plans. One thing Dorothy discovered in her research is that it is nearly impossible to find anything about this town online. There are a few extremely basic websites for some of the businesses, but all of them are several years out of date, and the only way to contact the businesses is to call. There was no online booking, which is fine, but definitely strange compared to most of the rest of the world, at least what Dorothy has seen of it. The owner, Mrs. Ashby, shows them to their room, which has 2 beds and a small television with a combination VHS-DVD player. She explains there's a movie library in the lobby, and anything they wish to see they need only ask. There's a movie catalog in one of the nightstand drawers, and as Dorothy skimmed the list after Mrs. Ashby left, she can't help but laugh at just how out of date the movie selection is. This town is so completely removed from the world, she wonders how they even have electricity. "I don't have any signal," Andy says, attempting to log into any of her social accounts. Dorothy pulls out her own phone and checks the only social she has, a private Instagram account she uses only to check up on the people from her old life, one that doesn't even have a profile photo attached, and discovers it won't load either. "Woo!" she says, tossing her phone onto the bed she's claimed as hers and throwing her arms up. "Off the grid, baby!" Andy snorts and slips her phone into her pocket. Dorothy knows she's waiting on a message from Danny, but she has a feeling even if they had any signal, she wouldn't be getting one. He does his groveling in person, and rarely even checks his cell phone. Dorothy doesn't understand why he even pays for one if he never uses the damn thing, but it's none of her business what the dumbass spends his money on. "What do we want to do first?" Andy asks, collapsing onto her bed and grabbing the movie catalog. "Ooh, they have Dracula with Winona Ryder. We should check that out tonight." Dorothy snatches the catalog out of her hand and holds it high above her head. Childish, she knows, but she's a good several inches or so taller than her cousin. She's 5'11", leaving Andy at just above 5 feet, and Andy scowls as she folds her arms across her chest. Dorothy grins. "I was thinking we could, you know, do some actual hiking today," Dorothy says, gesturing to the outfit she's wearing. She's dressed for this already. She is ready to go exploring. She almost feels antsy, like if she doesn't get out right now, she's going to be missing out on things that she'll never be able to see again. Andy sighs, sitting up on the bed and digging through the duffel she packed. Fine, but we are so watching Dracula tonight. Dorothy sets the catalog on the nightstand between their beds and heads into the bathroom to begin the tedious task of braiding her hair. She finishes just as Andy finishes tying up the laces on her boots, which Dorothy had made her wear over the last 2 weeks so they were broken in, because the last thing she wants on this trip is for Andy to get hurt. But also, she does not want to listen to her complain about blisters. Just... no. They collect their things, scooping up their backpacks full of supplies. Water bottles, snacks, a couple first aid kits, the good stuff, before locking the room and heading out to the car. Neither of them glance back to look at the room one last time. But why should they? Neither of them knows they won't be returning. Hey everyone, this is Raven, host and story writer of Mountain Hill Radio. I just wanted to take a moment and thank all of you for listening and spreading the word about the show. It truly means the world to me to have your support, and I really hope you continue to enjoy the story. I'm really excited to share this with all of you, and I hope you love it as much as I do. I also wanted to say thanks for your patience while I was sick. It was a rocky few weeks, but I'm doing much better now, and I'm back and ready to get back into the show. The next episode will be up November 29th, so keep an eye out for that, and don't forget to follow me on social media. I'm at Mountain Hill Radio Podcast on Instagram and at Mountain Hill Radio Pod on TikTok, and you can search Mountain Hill Radio on Facebook. Don't forget to share the show with your friends, and if you post about the show, use the hashtag Mountain Hill Radio so I can see it. All music featured in the show is produced by Zach Bradshaw. You can find him by searching for Nautilus of the Tide on Instagram and all streaming platforms. Check out his music, it's all super good and he absolutely deserves all the support. That wraps up everything I had to say. I just want to say thanks one more time, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the episode. It is a scream in the middle of the night that alerts Lyra and Colin that something is amiss. This is Colin's third week patrolling the woods surrounding Mountain Hill, his third week living in this strange town, and still he is not used to the utter chaos of it. He has spent every waking moment possible studying the journals from Mrs. Bell, trying to discover why exactly he has magic. But as far back as he reads, as much as he has discovered, no one in the entire history of Mountain Hill has ever been born with magic. Mrs. Bell has no answers, and it's a little frustrating to say the least. But he can't blame her or anyone else for this predicament. Who would he even blame? He doesn't know, but he's trying to figure it out. The scream echoes from the direction of the Midland View hiking trail, and Colin groans as they make their way over. "How much do you want to bet it's girls from earlier?" he asks Lyra as they start up the path. Lyra nods. "I had a feeling, and Mrs. Bell did say another one of us would be here soon." She holds her bat over one shoulder, slowing her steps so Colin keeps up. He pretends not to notice, and she pretends she doesn't do it for him, but he's grateful. She is fast, much faster than she has any right to be. They've discovered they have abilities on nights where there are no creatures to fight and boredom strikes. Lyra is strong enough to punch through a brick wall, and Colin's magic grants him all sorts of super awesome gifts, like the ability to breathe underwater, for one. And sometimes, if he focuses hard enough, he can see in the dark. It's not perfect, but it works for the most part. He's reminded of wearing a bad pair of night vision goggles every time he uses it, but it's better than what Lyra can see. He's using this ability now, and Lyra is following close behind him as they hurry as quietly as they can through the woods. "I wish I stopped them earlier," she says, and Colin can detect a hint of guilt in her tone. "You can save everyone, Lyra. You didn't even realize they were here until Mrs. Bell said something," Colin reminds her. He recalls a scene from this afternoon, when Mrs. Bell stopped by Lost Fiction to drop off some homemade bread for Lyra and Colin. Colin was busy editing photos. He has decided to drive to the nearest Wi-Fi capable town and upload his photos online twice a month to keep a steady income coming in while he tries to discover the source of his magic. Though he has had to start carrying cash on him since discovering nowhere in the town has card readers. He was lucky enough to have a little bit of cash that first day at the grocery store, but his first full week here he'd had to rely on Lyra to pay for things. And Lyra was reading some horror novel or another. Colin has learned not to mess with Lyra's horror addiction. She takes it quite seriously, and often spends hours at a time recapping entire novels to him. Mrs. Bell set the bread on the counter and said, "There are strangers in town. Two women. I think one of them might be who we're looking for." Lyra set her book down immediately and asked, "Where are they?" Mrs. Bell shook her head. "Already hacking. I just spoke with Mrs. Ashby. They're staying at the inn for the next week, so maybe hang out over there for a little while and speak to them when they return." Mrs. Ashby can't remember whether she gave them the full rundown on how things work around here, bless her sweetheart, so I need y'all to make sure to keep an eye out for them. They'd spent an hour before sundown waiting at the inn, but when neither woman returned, they knew something had gone wrong. Neither of them knew where to begin looking, so they made their way to the outskirts of town and began patrolling the different trailheads. "Is this area just more cursed than anywhere else?" Colin asks, frowning as he remembers the hollow wraith he first encountered. He's seen more of them now, but that hasn't lessened his absolute terror about the damn things. "Seems like..." Lyra grabs onto his shoulder and Colin stops, glancing around. "Listen," she whispers. There is a clicking, a sound that reminds Colin a little of a bicycle wheel turning, to the right. They're near the yellow wildflowers, and Colin stifles a groan. "Why does it have to be out there?" he whispers, and Lyra grins. "It's about time," she says, tugging him forward. "Come on, Colin, let's go kick some creature ass." Colin sighs and heads towards the flowers, feeling dread in the pit of his stomach as they cross the barrier. Instantly, he and Lyra both shudder at the sudden and intense chill in the air. This particular area of the woods is one they've taken to calling the Dread. The Dread is a 1 square mile chunk of forest that is surrounded on all sides by yellow wildflowers, creating a barrier around an area absolutely rife with magic. Though Colin has never entered the Dread, Lyra has. It was her second week in Mountain Hill, and she'd gone in during daylight hours, assuming she would be safe. But time and space works differently in the areas of the woods surrounded by the yellow wildflowers, and even entering the areas when the sun is highest in the sky is a risk. Lyra hadn't known, but she learned quickly what kind of horrors await in the Dread and beyond. "Creatures are far stronger in the Dread than they are when they're roaming around Mountain Hill," she explained to Colin that day he'd chosen to stay, rather than run from his fate. "They're faster, too. And they are things that have never been properly documented in the journals because it seems past hunters had no interest in entering these areas." Now as they continue on, with Colin guiding the way, Lyra wishes she would have brought a jacket. She knows how cold it can get in the Dread, especially with the lack of light sources. When she'd entered the first time, it had been like stepping into an entirely new reality, a frozen wasteland trapped in one single moment in time. No one has ever been able to figure out why areas like the Dread exist, only that the creatures within are trapped there. She wonders if it was a burst of magic that created these areas, or whether someone like Colin stumbled upon these dark creatures and used magic and the yellow wildflowers to contain them. "Fuck, it's freezing in here," Colin notes, unnecessarily. As they move deeper into the Dread, towards the source of the scream just a few moments ago, their breath begins to fog in front of their faces, and Lyra wrinkles her nose as if that will return its warmth. "Only a little further," Lyra says. She isn't sure how exactly she knows, but Colin doesn't question her. This is how things have been since he decided to stay. He follows her without question and heeds her advice and her instincts completely. Though she knows, according to Mrs. Bell's prophecy, Mrs. Bell hates that they call it that, but what else could they possibly call it? It's a freaking prophecy. She is supposed to be the leader of the group. Lyra thinks Colin's need to follow her lead has more to do with his many anxieties than with who she's supposed to be, but that doesn't matter. She's happy to be the person he looks to for advice or guidance, even if she isn't sure most of the time what she's doing or where she's going. "What do you think it is?" Colin asks, a hint of nervousness entering his tone. "I mean, I guess we won't really know, will we?"
"Not until we see it," Lyra confirms.
She's shivering violently now, and makes a mental note that the next time they enter the Dread, because as much as she wishes they'll never have to come here again, she knows that's entirely unlikely, to bring a jacket along. Or at least to start keeping a jacket in Colin's car. They finally enter a small clearing, the ground like a frozen mirror reflecting the foliage above and around it. Lyra's eyes dart around, searching for the source of the scream they'd heard, while Colin's eyes snag on the strange sight before them.
It's early summer in Mountain Hill, and while the temps don't quite reach sky high during the day, they haven't gone below 50 overnight either. But in this clearing, if he had to guess, it's nearing zero. They won't last long in here, and he worries what it will take to get Lyra out of here and back to a safer climate without finding the ones they came to save. Just as he's about to open his mouth to start convincing her it's in their best interest to get out of there, the clicking sound from a four comes from across the clearing, startling them both to attention. At first, there's nothing, just the ominous clicking, but then... "Oh, fuck," Colin breathes, and Lyra feels inclined to echo the sentiment. The creature is unlike anything they've ever seen. It's tall, at least a foot taller than Lyra, and thin. Its head is long and appears to be made of tree bark, with black holes carved where its eyes and mouth should be. The rest of its body moves in twitching, flickering movements, as if it's glitching somehow. Its hands, with long fingers tipped in sharp nails, are covered in blood, as are its strange clothes, which are ratty and torn, as if they are years upon years old. In one hand, it almost looks like there are clumps of hair trapped in its nails, and Lyra holds her breath, her heart beating erratically in her chest. This is far worse than anything she has faced so far, and if the blood on its clothing is any indicator, it has already claimed at least one life tonight. No human being could bleed that much and still live. "Lyra?" Colin breathes, moving closer to her. "The blood." She nods, not wanting to say anything until they know for sure. Until they find the women in whatever state they may be in, they are perfectly alive and well. She can't move forward with any other thought in her head. If she were to start thinking that they might be hurt or dead, she isn't sure if she could go on. And it would be her fault, regardless of what anyone else believed. "I'm going to go in there," she says, "to distract it. I want you to look around and see if you can find them anywhere, okay? Don't jump in unless it seems likely to beat me, and even then, I want you to save the girls first. Got it?" Colin looks at her in disbelief, but her expression tells him there's absolutely no room for arguments. He respects her too much to try to fight her, but he knows if he can't find the two women, he's not going to leave her. Lyra strides onto the frozen ground, somehow managing not to slip and fall on her ass. Colin waits just a moment for her to catch the creature's attention. The clicking intensifies once it sees her, the only outward sign it knows she's there, before he gets moving. "Well, aren't you pretty ugly?" Lyra taunts, and Colin rolls his eyes. She always speaks before she starts fighting, and Colin thinks it's a bit of a nervous habit. The clicking stops, and Colin is tempted to check over his shoulder as he moves silently through the wilderness, but then he hears the telltale sound of Lyra's bat as it makes contact with something solid, and he knows they've begun to fight. Colin isn't sure exactly what he's looking for. Mrs. Bell gave them rudimentary descriptions of the girls based on what Mrs. Ashby had told her, but they certainly aren't enough to go by. He figures, though, it's highly unlikely he'll stumble upon anyone else lost out in the wilderness. There weren't any other visitors to town as far as he's aware, and everyone in town knows to stay away from the wildflowers. The trees here seem almost haunted. If he looks close enough, it almost seems like there are faces etched into the trunks of the trees. He wonders if this is where the creature Lyra is fighting got its mask, or, God forbid, there are more of those awful things trapped in the trees somehow, and they are well and truly fucked if that's the case. Colin is trying to be optimistic. He's failing miserably. He's nearly rounded to the side of the clearing the creature came from when he hears a soft, pained groan a little further ahead. His heart races as he makes his way towards the sound, hoping against all hope that both of the women made it and they're just knocked out or something. Colin stumbles into a smaller clearing, and his dinner threatens to make a reappearance at the site before him. There's blood. Too much blood for it to be possible that whoever it is survived. And the rest? "Oh God," he mutters, closing his eyes for a moment and taking deep breaths through his mouth. The smell is something he doesn't think he'll ever forget. He's going to burn every single article of clothing he's wearing after they get out of here, because there's no way the smell will ever go away. He opens his eyes once more, ignoring the blood and viscera scattered through the clearing, and focusing on the individual lying completely still in the center of it all. The woman is tall, he can tell, but not nearly as tall as Lyra. Her hair is black and braided into two braids on either side of her head. She is dressed for hiking. Boots and jeans and flannel and even a jacket, despite the warm afternoon earlier today. There is no sign of the other woman, and Colin's heart cracks in his chest for this absolute stranger. Whoever she is, whoever the other woman was, he doesn't know how she's going to be able to carry on from this. He knows from Mrs. Bell's conversation that the two women were cousins. Mrs. Ashby mentioned that they seemed close, almost like sisters. Colin wants to cry for her and her cousin, but there isn't any time for that. Lyra still battles the creature, which she has decided to call the Dreadwood, and she only hopes Colin can find the women and get them both out of here on his own. She's not sure she'll be able to hold this thing off much longer. Her arm bleeds from where it gouged its claws, and she's pretty sure it got her in the side too. The pain is unbearable, and she wonders if the thing has some sort of poison on its claws. Not that that matters. The amount of dirt and blood on it are enough to convince her even if she kills it, she'll definitely get an infection of some kind. Lyra's head is spinning, but she keeps fighting. She rolls across the frostbitten ground, catching the creature in the back of one of its knees hard enough to make it stumble. It clicks, and she realizes this must be its way of communicating. "Lyra!" Colin shouts, and she winces, not daring to take her eyes off of the Dreadwood in front of her. "Get out of here, Colin!" she shouts back, trying to keep the creature's attention focused on her. It's too late. It has heard Colin, and it's turning to face him. "Lyra, there's more of them! We need to run, now!" Lyra curses, taking one final swing at the Dreadwood before turning to face Colin. He's stumbling, a dazed-looking woman's arm draped around his shoulders. She looks for signs of another, but comes up short. She knows the other woman is dead, but she can't dwell on that right now. There are two more Dreadwoods on either side of the clearing, and they have begun clicking. Another appears to peel itself away from the bark of a tree, and Lyra knows if she can't even bring down one of these assholes, she's not going to be able to kill four of them. She curses again, making a run towards Colin, who is struggling to keep upright with the woman leaning against him. Lyra catches up to him easily, and with a deep breath, scoops the woman up and over her shoulder. Her extra strength she gained since moving to Mountain Hill does not fail her now. She manages to keep upright as she begins running, despite her injuries. She knows it must be a wave of adrenaline making this possible, just as she knows it's likely she's going to pass out when they finally make it back to Colin's car, but she keeps pushing forward. Even if it means hurting herself more, she has to get Colin and this stranger out of here. They run, and the sound of the clicking Dreadwoods follows them all the way to the border of yellow wildflowers. The air grows steadily warmer as they push forward, and Colin breathes a sigh of relief when he finally sees the finish line. Lyra stumbles just as they reach the threshold, managing to set the stranger down before she collapses, and Colin's heart feels like it's going to explode in his chest. They are mere 10 feet from their end goal, but Lyra has fallen and doesn't appear to be moving. "Oh fuck, oh jeez," he says, panic leeching into every word. He doesn't know what to do. The woman he found is still very out of it, but the creatures are closing in. He takes a deep breath, closing his eyes, trying to calm his racing heart. His magic is affected by his emotions. He has learned that panic makes whatever magic he attempts to wield out of control. He has almost lit several buildings and trees on fire, and Lyra has advised that maybe fire isn't the best thing for him to be using in their current setting. But those things that are chasing them appear to be made of the trees themselves. Fire is definitely what he needs to be using. He opens his eyes again, and he can feel heat building in the palms of his hands. He lifts one, taking aim at one of the creatures, but before he can do anything, a loud gunshot sounds from behind him. Colin jumps, his magic dissipating instantly. He turns to look at the source of the sound, and finds Sheriff Thornton standing inside the border of wildflowers, her gun raised and aimed at the creatures. "Colin," she says, her voice entirely too calm for the situation, "I need you to keep those things distracted while I get Lyra and that woman out of here. Can you do that for me?" He nods, thinking maybe firing a shot towards the things was the worst thing she could do in this moment, since now their attention is focused entirely on her, but it's too late to change that now. Instead, he jumps up and down, raising his arms above his head as he begins running to the left, shouting, "Over here, you things!" He isn't very good at taunting the creatures, but apparently it doesn't matter what you say. The one nearest him changes course, drawn to his shouting and waving. He feels heat building once again in his body, and he takes a deep breath before taking aim at the creature. A ball of flame, small but extremely bright in the darkness of the dread, shoots toward the creature, hitting it in the leg. Its clicking grows louder as it collapses, wrapping one large hand around the scorched area. The other three creatures finally turn to face him, creating an opening for Tilly to run in and grab the stranger, walking her to the edge of the woods before returning for Lyra. Colin takes aim once more and manages to catch the creature in the chest. Its clicking speeds up, turning to more of a trilling before it falls backwards. It doesn't move again. "Colin!" Tilly shouts. He glances at her and sees her standing on the other side of the wildflowers, waving frantically at him. Lyra is lying on the ground, still unconscious, and Colin finally sees the scratch on her arm and the other at her waist. His stomach drops, and with one final glance at the horrifying creatures of the dread, he sprints to the wildflowers and jumps over, landing hard on the other side in the dirt. "Lyra!" he shouts, rushing to her side. Tilly crouches beside him, her entire body tense as she watches him. He learned, after one mishap a week or so ago that left Lyra with a severely sprained ankle that he has the ability to heal in small amounts. He's never tried to heal on this scale before, but even if it only does a little, it should be enough to get her stable so they can get to Lost Fiction. "Is she going to be okay?" Tilly asks, and Colin's heart is in his throat as he glances at her. Her eyes are wide with terror as she stares at his hands, which are hovering over Lyra as he attempts to bring forth his healing energy. He has witnessed, more than a few times, Tilly's fussing over Lyra. A week ago, when she had a minor cold, Tilly stopped by the shop to drop off a Tupperware of chicken noodle soup and didn't leave until Lyra drained the broth and ate every bite of the chicken and vegetables. She is also there after every hunt, despite her declaration that she doesn't want to get involved, and she is nearly as much of a mother hen as Mrs. Bell is when it comes to Lyra being injured. Lyra claimed more than a few times that there is nothing between them, that it's just Tilly being a good sheriff. Colin hasn't pointed out that she's going completely out of her way because he worries it will give Lyra a crisis if she thinks the woman she has a crush on might be into her too. Now his suspicions are confirmed as Tilly grasps Lyra's hand in hers, but again, he says nothing. This is their business, and until one of them confides in him about it, he is going to stay out of it. He closes his eyes, digging down deep to find that single thread of power he always feels whenever he heals. It's weak, but he manages to tug on it and bring it up to the surface until his hands warm once again. This warmth is different, somehow, than the warmth he feels whenever he draws on his fire magic, and as he takes a deep breath, the warmth increases until it almost feels like a buzzing. He continues on like this for a moment, not wanting to open his eyes until the warmth fades. He isn't sure how much help he has provided, and he almost fears to open his eyes. But then Tilly gasps from beside him, and he finally looks. The wounds are... they're just... gone. Where there were four jagged lines across her waist and down her arm, there are now thin white scars, which are fading even as Colin watches. His brows climb into his hairline as he glances at Tilly, but she isn't looking at him. "She's not waking up," Tilly says, and Colin reaches over and places his hand on her shoulder. She finally meets his gaze, and he sees how glassy her eyes are. She won't cry. She's too tough and stubborn for that, but she is near to it. "She needs rest," he says, squeezing her shoulder gently before dropping his hand. "Can you carry her?" Tilly nods and rises. Colin helps her lift Lyra, carrying her between them to Tilly's cruiser. Once Lyra is safely tucked in the passenger seat, Colin turns to the woman they rescued tonight. She is no longer where they left her, and he curses as he glances around for her, his stomach once again catapulted into space. She's standing on the other side of the wildflowers, and the three creatures are surrounding her, their clicking nearly completely silent. In her hands are two knives, and Colin watches in a mix of horror and fascination as she cuts down one, then another. The clicking grows louder as each one collapses. Not dead, but not moving either. They all go completely still, and Colin realizes they must have reverted to their tree states. The woman turns once all three are still, her blue eyes meeting Colin's as she crosses back over the wildflowers, and immediately bends at the waist and vomits all over the ground. Lyra exists in a strange, unconscious state, though she isn't exactly sure how long she's there. She briefly hears who she believes to be Tilly telling her everything is going to be okay. She has a sensation of being carried, then settled gently on a soft surface. There are voices around her, familiar as they explain things to someone who is unfamiliar. She hears the quiet sniffles of this stranger, followed by the soft reassurances of her roommate. She stumbles deeper into unconsciousness, where strange images form in her mind, events which have not yet come to pass unfolding one after another in rapid succession. A tall man with red hair and a beard who is familiar in a strange way, holding a shining axe as he stares down a creature she has fought before. Four silhouettes walking down a long dirt path. A lake, flashes of lightning, a deep, dark laugh that echoes all around her. A sword, large and shining and beautiful, glowing with a strange ethereal green light. The visions fade eventually, until she is floating in a blissful nothingness. But even that fades, until finally, her eyes open. It is mid-afternoon, based on the light streaming in through the window. Renford is asleep in a chair beside her bed, his head thrown back with a thick hardcover book in his lap. His finger still marks the page, as if he thought only to rest his eyes for a moment, and she smiles slightly at the sight. She takes a deep breath as memories slowly return to her, and her smile fades with each remembrance. She'd almost been to the end of the wildflowers when she collapsed. Obviously, they all made it out alive, or at least she did. She has no idea whether Colin managed to get her and the stranger out, but she hopes nonetheless that he did. Lyra takes a deep breath before pushing her covers away and glances over herself. She is wearing a t-shirt and her sweats, and she wonders who changed her clothes, but knows it was likely Mrs. Bell. She's grateful, since her other clothes were most likely ruined. Lyra briefly mourns the shirt she'd been wearing, a green button-down with sloth heads dotted all across it, before checking her wounds. Completely healed. Her brows furrow as she looks where she should have at least scarred, but finds absolutely nothing. Colin must have healed her, then. She quietly climbs out of bed, careful not to disturb Renford, and makes her way out to her living room. Colin sits on the couch, one of the many journals in his lap as he glances through it. Mrs. Bell is in the kitchen, scrubbing the countertops. The smell of baking cookies is strong in the air, and Lyra smiles at the normality of it. Mrs. Bell is often in their kitchen, making some baked good or another. Finally, her eyes land on the small table in the tiny dining area of the apartment, where she sees Tilly, who is in the middle of flipping through a newspaper and sipping at a mug, likely coffee, and the stranger, whose eyes are glassy and haunted as she stares off into space. Colin is the first to notice her. He snaps the journal shut as he jumps up, rushing to her and wrapping her up in a tight hug. Lyra hugs him back and laughs as he says, "Don't you ever do that again, Lyra. I'll kick your ass." That gets everyone else's attention then, and Mrs. Bell is there immediately, next in line for a hug. Tilly doesn't wrap her up, which is not unexpected, but frowns in her typical way as she says, "It was reckless doing what you did. Brave, but so damn reckless." "Good to see you too, Tilly," Lyra says, and she counts a slight quirk out the corner of Tilly's mouth as a smile. The stranger rises, staring at Lyra as she makes her way over to the group. She holds out her hand, a slight tremor rolling through her as she says, "Name's Dorothy." Dorothy doesn't really remember what happened that night. It all comes in flashes after she and Andy cross the line of wildflowers in the woods. She remembers the sudden dark, the bone-deep chill that refused to let up, and the clicking. She hasn't stopped hearing the clicking, even now, 4 days later. She doesn't know why the thing, which Lyra announces after introductions are made and explanations are given, she named the Dreadwood, went after Andy first. Dorothy is glad she doesn't remember much after they were taken, and she hates herself for it. Andy deserves better. She deserves to have at least one person know and remember her final moments, but Dorothy will never have to remember. No one quite knows what to say to her. After they explained everything that first night when they first arrived back at the apartment, Dorothy locked herself in the bathroom for hours and sat on the floor in the shower, not crying, not feeling, just breathing. She has experienced death before, has even been tasked with dealing it out once upon a time, but she doesn't know how to handle Andy's death. The sheriff explained that Andy will be listed as a missing person, that there wasn't enough of her left to even attempt recovering a body, and Dorothy understands that. It's not like either of them really has anyone to mourn them besides each other. Lyra, who seems to be the most cheerful one of the bunch, offers Dorothy a hug, and she accepts, feeling somehow comfortable enough with the stranger to receive a hug from her. Not even the sweet old woman was able to coax her into such a comfort, but she feels a strange kinship with Lyra that she can't quite explain. Except, she kind of can. Mrs. Bell explained her visions, how she foresaw Dorothy coming to Mountain Hill. She explained that she can't see everything. The time and day Dorothy would arrive was not revealed to her, nor was the fact that Andy would tag along. She explained that Dorothy was the third member of this group that is meant to protect Mountain Hill, and Dorothy almost laughed in her face. She couldn't even protect Andy, someone she cared about more than anything in the world. How could she possibly be expected to protect this town? Once Lyra has been awake for a while, Dorothy tells everyone that she is going to be leaving the following morning. Colin isn't surprised at all at this announcement. He has been waiting for it ever since she first learned the truth about everything. His first instinct had been to run, too, but Colin gets the feeling that Dorothy is going to run and she is never going to look back. He can't exactly say he blames her. Who would want to stay after what she'd been through? He also isn't surprised when, the following morning, Dorothy is just gone without any goodbyes. She left a note, thanking Lyra for the clothing. The pants had been too long on her, but she'd simply rolled them up and tucked them into her hiking boots. But it seems as though every other trace of her has been completely erased from the apartment. Colin helps Lyra in the store that afternoon, shelving books and vacuuming the rugs scattered around the room. She hasn't said as much, but he knows she's still exhausted. She told him last night about the vision she experienced while she was unconscious, and while neither of them had any answers about them, Colin has a feeling they are important somehow. There is a storm coming to Mountain Hill, And whether it be literally or figuratively, Colin fears they will be one person short when it comes time to face it. Mrs. Bell stops by in the afternoon to drop off some homemade chili. "Colin, be a dear and go grab a ball for Lyra," she says, earning a scowl from the woman sitting behind the counter. "Oh, quit looking at me like that. You just woke up after being unconscious for 4 days. Let us take care of you for once." Lyra snorts, but doesn't argue. Colin grins as he heads into the break room to collect a bowl and spoon for his friend, depositing them onto the counter. Lyra frowns at him, and he winks at her, earning an eye roll in return. Still, he knows she's grateful, even if she's going to be difficult about it. "Do you think she'll be back?" Lyra asks. This is the first time any of them have spoken about Dorothy since this morning, and she watches Mrs. Bell's expression carefully. "Yes," she answers, after a moment's hesitation. "She'll be back. Though, I suspect Dorothy will need you both more than you'll need her. She's deeply broken after losing Andy, and she has a history, something dark and full of danger. I fear she's going to turn back to that history in her grief. When she returns, she's going to bring that danger back with her. But it won't be anything the four of you can't handle."
"So the fourth will be with us soon?"
Colin asks. Lyra stifles her smile at his question. He's warmed up incrementally to Mrs. Bell, though he still occasionally clams up when he tries to speak to her. It's progress, something no one will comment on because they don't want to make him self-conscious about it. Mrs. Bell opens her mouth to respond, just as the bell above the door rings. Lyra glances at it, a smile breaking across her face as she says, "Welcome to Lost Fiction. Can we help?" She cuts off abruptly as she takes in the man's appearance. He's tall, with short red hair and a long beard. He's wearing a red flannel and blue jeans over steel-toed work boots. Lyra glances at Colin, who raises his brows. He recognizes this man too, both from her description and from his previous visits to Mountain Hill. "Rufus," Mrs. Bell says, smiling bright at the man. "What brings you in today? Renford didn't tell me he ordered anything in."
"Oh," he says, smiling at her as he walks further into the room. "Actually, I'm just stopping by to say hello. My truck broke down, so I'll be in town for a few days while Derek and Alice look at it."
Colin and Lyra exchange a look. She mouths, "Damn imps," and Colin rolls his eyes. But they both know she's right.
"Perfect," Mrs. Bell says. "Well, you can come over for dinner with Renford and I tonight then, and we can finally catch up."
"It would be my pleasure," Rufus says.
They make their arrangement, and Rufus leaves after agreeing to meet at the Bell's place at 3 p.m. He knows the rules of town, knows he has to return to his room at the inn before sundown, so dinner will be very early tonight. Once he's gone, Mrs. Bell turns to Colin and Lyra and says, "Well?" Colin glances at Lyra, waiting to follow her lead, and Lyra stands, rising to her full height. "It seems everything is finally falling into place."
"That it is," Mrs. Bell says. She smiles.
"Three down, one to go." This has been Mountain Hill Radio. I'm just a woman, alone in a radio tower, speaking into the void and hoping that somebody hears me. I hope whoever you are listening to this, that you are somewhere warm and safe, and that you remember you were never alone. I am always here with you, your constant companion into the late dark hours of night. Remember, everything you've heard is absolutely fictional. There are no monsters roaming the streets, and under absolutely no circumstances is it okay to leave your house after curfew. Thank you for listening.